I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Continuing with our series of conversations with remarkable minds, we're going to examine the status of U.S. economies. That's plural. My guest today is Professor Michael Hudson. Michael Hudson is one of our nation's finest, most honest, and insightful economists. He is also a Wall Street financial analyst. Dr. Paul Craig Roberts recently called him the world's best economist. He's currently the president of the Institute for the Study of Long-Term Economic Trends and was the chief economic policy advisor for Representative Dennis Kucinich's presidential campaign. He has also worked for the White House, the State Department, the Defense Department as an advisor, and also through the Hudson Institute, in addition to the United Nations Institute, where he became a specialist in global economics. He has written many books and important papers and articles. His most recent is Killing the Host: How Financial Parasites and the Debt Bondage Destroy the Global Economy, which goes into great depth in explaining how the polarization of the 1% versus the 99% emerged. His website is michael-hudson.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Good to be back, Gary.
Michael, I'm going to raise several points that I consider important at this particular time with our new president, but also in this analysis that I'm going to ask you to do, I would like for you to share insights that this is not a new phenomenon we're facing. This has been around for probably 36 years or longer, but now we're starting to see how it's all impacting us. So here are the areas I would like for you to address, please. First, we are told that we had, at the end of Obama's administration, just at 5% or a little under of unemployment. And yet, when I study the figures, I'm looking at 22% as the minimum. And in some groups, like African Americans who have graduated from college but not yet in the workplace, it's upwards of 50%. And I'm looking at 96 million Americans who had worked full-time at one time, but now don't work at all, have stopped looking for work, or only work part-time. And yet they are not being factored into the honest unemployment level. And I'd like to know what, in your opinion, is the honest unemployment level, and what would happen if we had to be honest about it? So that's one area I'd like for you to address. Separately, we keep talking about the economy as if there's one fixed economy, and that is our anchor upon which all economic policy is made. And yet I find that if you are a working-class person, or you're part-time, or a student, if you're a single parent, if you're a person who, let's say, does not have a lot of savings, and the 50% of Americans don't have $1,000 to their name in savings, they can't go without being working, or they couldn't support any of their lifestyle. And yet, we're not looking at their plight. I saw some statistics that we have over 2.5 million Americans earning $2 a day or less. Who would have thought that was possible? 16.8 million hungry children, they're food insecure. 2.4 million children who don't have a home, they're literally homeless. 7 million Americans who lost their home, 7 million homes that were lost, that's 28 million Americans, yet no one talks about them at all. You see no articles about them because they managed to find some place to live with a relative or some place that they're not in a shelter, as if we have, as long as we only count people in shelters, that's the only homeless we have, and yet that's not a real figure. And then what really bothers me is the latest figures that were not shared anywhere. I looked over the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Barron's, Fortune, Forbes, all of your business magazines. I could not find this, except you are familiar with these figures, the real amount of money that the American people backed but were unaware of, that the major corporations got to bail them out after the 2007-8 crash. And the latest figure I have is $29.6 trillion. And then it's broken down, including $8 trillion that went to the European Central Bank, and then the amount that went to each of the American institutes. And yet, we didn't bail out a single small business. We didn't bail out a single homeowner. We didn't stop home foreclosures. And yet the President of the United States, had he taken a message to the American people and used the media like a bully pulpit or an FDR fireside chat, we could have gotten a moratorium on home foreclosures. We could have stopped predatory interest rates. None of that was done by Obama nor Clinton when Clinton had power to make her voice heard. And of course, it didn't happen under George Bush. So would you just give us your overview in each of these areas? What's really going on with the average person? What's going on in their economy? Why the big banks continue to be able to create any amount of profit or debt that they want, and how that impacts the rest of us, and why we're not honest about the amount of money that we've given to these people who actually contributed to the crisis that we're in. The forum is yours.
Well, Gary, hardly by surprise, the figures you're talking about are figures that the Obama administration is embarrassed about and wants to avoid. You've cited the very widespread figure of 22% unemployment old style, in the sense that you're talking about people who don't have the kind of jobs that people think of as being fully employed, a full-time job with pensions or certainly with medical care. The government counts as employed everybody who's looking for work. So if you're living in a town in the Rust Belt or flyover America, you're not looking for work anymore. And so you're not even counted in the figures. So that's one thing that the government doesn't count. Also, most of the new jobs are all minimum wage jobs. And the new employers in the last 8 years, in order to avoid having to pay medical care and other medical insurance, in order to avoid paying overtime and to avoid giving holidays, they employ people part-time. And the part-time is really a downgrading for employment. It's not the kind of employment that people really expect. So they've got the reported figure of unemployment, you know, way down, but it's not really. That's what they used to call underemployment. In other words, full employment would be if these part-time people were employed full-time. Full employment would be if they were employed at normal jobs where they get a vacation part of each year and where the companies pay for their medical insurance. That's not the kind of employment that's created today, so the employment statistics are very largely fake employment. You could say the same thing about the economy. When people talk about the economy going up in the newspapers, the New York Times and the Washington Post, and the basically they talk about gross domestic product. All of the increase in gross domestic product in the last 8 years during Obama's entire administration, all of the increase has only gone to 5% of the population. And that entire increase has only gone to the FIRE sector. That is, it's gone to Wall Street, it's gone to finance, health insurance, the insurance industry, and real estate. So if you're not in finance, insurance, and real estate at the very top of the 5% of the population, then you've actually gone down. So basically, there should be GDP for the 50%, GDP for the 90%, GDP for the 95%, and GDP for the 5%. And in that point, you'd see just about everybody going down and down and down, and only the Wall Street wealthy going up. But that's not how they do the GDP. And as a matter of fact, the other night I had dinner with someone who's just works for the United Nations, who's just re-put together the GDP numbers to describe how economies work. And he finds that to do the real economic output, you should subtract Wall Street. You should subtract the FIRE sector, because that doesn't really produce output. It's exploitation. In other words, if the insurance industry decides to charge health people more, if the banks decide to charge people more, All of that is counted as increasing output, and it doesn't increase output at all. It just takes from one pocket the 95% and puts it in the other pocket, the 5%. So these transfer payments shouldn't even be included in GDP, but they are in order to make it look good. Finally, you mention the bailout. Well, just look at what President Trump has done in the last 11 days. How much he's done. Obama had exactly the same advantage when the Democrats won in 2008. You had then one party controlling not only the presidency, but the House and the Senate. And that's because people wanted change. But Obama's position was, his role was to prevent change. His role was to prevent hope. He'd promised to victims of junk mortgage lending would be bailed out. And instead, as soon as he got in, he said he changed his mind. He double-crossed the voters, and he did give a net altogether about $4.3 trillion to Wall Street, which is still unpaid. You mentioned $27 trillion. That was the gross amount. The government continued to make loans to U.S. banks and to foreign banks of about $23 trillion over the current balance of $4 trillion, but the $23 billion's been paid back. The government essentially gave this money to Wall Street to gamble, to make money including by evicting people from their homes and taking them over, giving them money to play with. And now the banks and Wall Street have made enough money off this gross $27 trillion to be in a position of power to... They made a very good investment. They invested it in buying the government. The government was privatized and sold to Wall Street. And that basically, the Wall Street people said, well, we've got to scuttle the election. The role of the Democrats is to move further and further right to make the Republicans look as the lesser evil. So Americans, no matter how much you may disagree with what President Trump has been doing for the last 11 days, much of it absolutely horrible, the fact is he was the lesser evil in the minds of most people. And most people thought, well, it's true that he's scuttling. He's fighting against regulatory rights, against women, but at least he's not going to war with Russia. At least he's not, so far, in the hands of Wall Street, and that's why he was elected, because bad as he is, he's not as bad as the alternative, and that tells you something about where the American political system's at.
I appreciate those insights, Michael. And it is true, if Hillary Clinton had been elected, NATO would be posturing in Poland, at the Russian border, all the saber rattlers, all the war hawks in Washington, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and the Kagan family, all would be trying to use the media, which it has substantial influence over, to posture that Russia is the problem. And then there's a high probability there could be a new Cold War. Whether it becomes a hot war or cold war, it would have increased spending on nuclear, something that we were supposed to have been getting rid of instead of increasing. That would have been $1 trillion. And then all the money, instead of going to help de-ghettoize America and help with student free education or a universal health care, of which Clinton opposed, that would have continued. All your predatory payday loans, your high interest rates on credit cards, all that would have increased. Debtors' prison would have increased. More African Americans and Latino and people of color, poor whites, would have ended up in prison who couldn't afford proper legal representation. The Trans-Pacific Partnership would have been gone through, where she would have said there were some modifications. There wouldn't have been anything that was fundamentally different.
That's
it would
right.
have absolutely destroyed American unions and all of our sovereignty. And also, she would have continued to support Saudi Arabia and Qatar and United Arab Emirates and Egypt. The people who gave her funds, grants, gifts to her foundation and her personally, that would have only increased. So terrorism would have continued. I just don't think that the average Democrat or the average corporate liberal has a full understanding of the consequences to what Hillary and Obama represented. Your thoughts on that?
I think you're right. You mentioned the labor unions. Obama had promised a card check to support the labor unions, and as soon as he got in, he double-crossed the unions. Now, look at what happened when President Trump got in. He invited the union leaders to there, and it sounded like a love fest. The union leaders supported him. So he's doing many things that Obama promised to do for hope and change, but refused to do. And you're right, if the corporate Democrats really understood or wanted to win, they wouldn't have supported Hillary. But the fact is, all of the polls were correct in May and June. They all showed that Hillary was going to lose very heavily to Donald Trump, but that Bernie Madoff would have won. And the corporate Democrat said, we would rather lose the election with Hillary than win with Bernie, because Hillary's our person. Hillary's going to complete the Obama revolution. She will now open the gates even more to the health insurance ripoffs. She will support Wall Street and absolutely slam down on labor and slam down on really the people who are the Democratic constituency, and probably would have double-crossed them even more than Obama. So the question is, how is it that the Democrat, the people who still vote Democrats, especially the women and the ethnic and racial minorities, how can they think that the Democratic Party is on their side? I think we're in, what the election has shown is that there really can't be any real progress for the economy until there is a party to replace the Democrats. I don't believe that it's reformable, given the current leadership of Russia haters like George Soros and the neocons. And as long as the neocons and Wall Street control the Democratic Party and will not give it up, as long as you have people like Nancy Pelosi and the Blue Dog Democrats and Cory Booker and these people there, you're not going to be able to have a party that actually fights for labor or labor unions or women or minorities. There has to be a point at which people can look at reality and not just all of the rhetoric and all of the sort of fake news that you get in the alas in the New York Times. It's just amazing when the fake news is accused of being RT, when it's actually the New York Times, Washington Post, you know, what has become the far right posing as if it were the mainstream.
What do you make of the Madonna's acting as if she is now a reputable spokesperson for a feminist perspective, when what she's saying about blowing up a White House and go F you and all these vulgar statements to a worldwide audience, when all the feminists that I know, the feminists who I respect and the feminists who speak for women all over the whole world, the Angela Davises, the Doris Huerta, the Winona LaDuke, Kate Millett, Alice Walker, Marianne Williamson. There's so many that the Charlene Spretnik and Reverend Sally Bingham and Lynn Twist and Sister Joan Chichester and Susan Sarandon and Daryl Hannah and Daisy Kahn and Lisa Sharon Harper, women who can articulate what it means to be a woman under duress, what it means to honor women's rights, but also are honoring the rights of women in countries that don't have those rights, who they're not there just as a photo op, just when there's a lot of people and you can take the stage and act like you're really one of the people, but all the rest of the time you're in private jets and private parties and making money, and you don't have a thing to do with the women's movement. And so there's Hillary acting as if she's the new leader of the feminist movement, and feminists giving her that credit when look at what she and her husband did to the minority population. Look at how bad Black and Latino and poor white women had it under Hillary and Bill Clinton's co-presidency. Take us through that, and then look around the world where people are marching here, but where were they for the last 8 years? Where were they when the gays were being thrown off buildings and killed and beheaded in Saudi Arabia? Where was the protest? Where were the demonstrations in front of the Saudi embassy? Where was the protest in front of the Egyptian embassy with the Muslim Brotherhood when they were in power and we were doing business with Egypt? Where were they protesting when women in Qatar and United Arab Emirates and Kuwait were also being repressed? I just find that there's a hypocrisy. And then you get the Michael Moores and others and even the so-called new democratic wing of the Democratic Party by the Young Turks. And it's still a corporate philosophy. It's still they represent the 1%, like it or not, because they are in the 1%. And I just feel that the people who are grabbing the microphones, the people who are rushing out there to get themselves on camera, don't represent true change and haven't been there for the people who suffer. I haven't seen them in Syrian refugee camps. I haven't seen them in a lot of places on a consistent basis. Those are my personal thoughts. I'd like to hear yours.
Well, I think you're quite right that the Women's March the day after the inauguration was hijacked. And the problem is that groups like Move On, that's funded by George Soros, and its allied movements have basically taken over the leadership, shoving out any leadership that isn't in the 1%, the top 1%. So you have the National Association of Women, headed by a billionaire in the Wall Street 1%. The same thing for the LGBTQ, headed by 1%. So it's basically all of these identity politics have been hijacked, really, by Wall Street. So it really is the Women's March for Wall Street, the Women's March for War with Russia, the LGBTs for Wall Street. And they're letting themselves be manipulated, and people will say, "Well, you know, we will divide you into you know, these various identity groups, but there's one identity that we're going to have to throw you out if you have that identity. There's one thing we will not tolerate: you cannot be a member of the working class. If you're a woman in the working class, get out of the women's movement." If you are an LGBTQ, but you have to work for a living, get out of our movement because we're the Democrats. We don't want you here. So I think that basically the women, the LGBTQ, these identity people should say, unless, you know, the most important thing above all is, number one, we want the Earth to survive without atomic war with Russia. Number two, we all want jobs. It's true we want equality. It's true we want these rights. But if you're going to say that you're pro-war, you're against peace, you're against the anti-war movement, and you're against labor, and you're not going to promote jobs, and you're for Wall Street and for untaxing the 1% and shifting the taxes on to the 99%, then we're not going to march under your banner, even if you say it'll be Women for Wall Street. Look, women, come along. We're going to say no. As long as you're a part of our group, you can't be a part of it. They're going to have to get rid of these people that do have a lot of funding, that do have a lot of money, and they're going to have to say, if the price of your money is to support right-wing policies, then that's going to discredit us in the women's movement. That's going to discredit us in the LGBTQ. That's going to discredit us anti-war people. So we're not going to let ourselves be taken over by Move On, by Soros, and by the people who have wrecked the Democratic Party and have turned the country over to Donald Trump, because awful as he is, he's not as awful as Hillary.
And that was what surprised me, is that people who were rightly angered by Donald Trump and his rhetoric and his posturing, his immaturity, and people should protest what they find offensive. But at the same time, where were they protesting in the last 8 years when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, but mainly Hillary Clinton, were destroying Libya and destroying Syria and creating a coup in Honduras and the Ukraine, and undermining any regime in the world that did not support our neoliberal and hegemonic concept of globalization? Where were the protests about the poor? And where I didn't see a single protest in America, not a single protest for 20 million people being thrown out of their homes. Now, that's something to protest, where you got 16 million hungry children going to bed each day. That's worth protesting. because their children, the people who had these movements and the celebrities, their children are not starving. And if your children are not starving, and if you don't have to worry about your next paycheck, then your perspective is not the same. And I just find there's just blatant hypocrisy. Barack Obama, and I just played a clip yesterday, Barack Obama deported more people out of the United States, including putting more under arrest in ICE prisons than all the other presidents combined in the 20th century. Not a word about it. Yep. Not a word. Seeing that all these bankers took the money and then created derivatives. Right now, four banks are holding $460 trillion in derivatives. The average person doesn't even know what a derivative is. And yet, if those go toxic, we're held accountable. And so I think that we have been misled and misdirected by people who are opportunists. And the good people, and I believe most people are good people when they join a movement, but they're following the leaders. And I don't trust these leaders. I don't believe in them. And they haven't been around when the rest of us have been there night and day for decades. They show up at an opportune time, grandstand, and then they're gone. And yet, you know, where do we go from there? Another area, Michael, would you take us into Europe? Now, I know, and I'm not breaking any confidences because you've also stated it, you have counseled many governments. You are so respected that the Chinese gave you multiple professorships, and you counsel with the leaders there in Iceland and other countries. And yet some of these countries are realigning their economic policies. They're changing the way that they are looking at the economy now in the future to make it more sustainable. Could you give us examples of what we as Americans should know about how other people who've been in crisis are rearranging their priorities, what they're doing, so we can also bring those into some of our movements?
Well, I'm not sure how much they're rearranging them. Europe is in really bad condition, and under the way that the euro is organized, they're not able to run budget deficits. They don't have a government. The condition of joining the euro is you do not run a deficit to increase employment. In fact, in order to balance the budget under terms that give more and more money to the upper 1%, you have to cut back social spending, and the result is a sharply decline in living standards in Europe. I just got back from England a little while ago. It's going down very sharply. That's why you're going to have elections in France this month and next, where Marine Le Pen is running on a policy of withdrawing from the euro. North Italians are talking about withdrawing from the euro. Greece is in crisis. I spent quite a bit of time there, and they're just being strangled. Essentially, Europe is being treated like a third world country. Even Iceland is not really recovered because the banks have an enormous amount of currency that so far they're not able to move out of the country. But if they ever try to convert their money and their takings into foreign currency, the Icelandic kroner will fall. So things are not good at all in Europe. They're not good in India because of the endemic corruption there and the experiment to get rid of cash. So China is really the only country that seems to be growing, because that's the only country that's really following the policies that made the United States so strong, that you have a mixed economy of the government and the rest of the economy, and the government spending and guidance is, and the fact that the government is the main creditor means, despite the fact that they have debt problems, the government as creditor can always forgive the debt. And nobody will complain because they're not taking money out of the hands of bankers. Now, Obama could not simply say, okay, people can't afford to repay the mortgage debt, we'll write them down, because if he would have done that, then Citibank would have lost, and Chase Manhattan would have lost, and Wells Fargo would have lost, and that's his constituency. But China doesn't have a independent bank constituency, so they don't have the pressure for the right that's happening. What President Trump is doing here is doing to the U.S. economy what we did to Russia in 1990, essentially wiping out the role of the government to act as a balancing force and a mediator. So, and Trump is simply doing what Obama's Trans-Pacific policy called for, essentially corporatizing the economy and removing the ability of government to regulate it. All this is in Obama's policy. So that's why, I think you should look at what Trump is doing now is the third term of Obama. Trump is Obama's legacy. And it's not good for America. It's not good for Europe. But in Europe, they think, well, nothing can be done legally under the Constitution until we withdraw from the euro and break up the European community. Just as Britain is leaving, you'll have France, Southern Europe, Spain, Italy all leave, and you'll have to re-put it together again. That's why the Democrats are trying to distract attention and saying, don't look at your problems here in America. Look at Russia. Always blame the enemy. That's what Hitler did in Germany to distract people in the 1930s. And it's exactly the playbook that both the Democrats and the Republicans are doing here in America.
There's a Spanish proverb that says, since I wronged you, I have never liked you.
Yep.
And I see that with Russia. Russia is not going to invade the United States. It does not represent either real or existential threat. And this is all distraction. Michael, my final question for you is this. When you look at what's happening in America today, with at least 260 million, or two-thirds of the population, nothing has been getting better for a long time. Looking at what Trump is doing now, as you said, carrying, he is the legacy of Obama, and he's the third term of Obama, what do you see the likely outcome? I realize this is a hypothesis, but a likely outcome as far as our economies, as far as the value of our dollar, and standard of living over the next 4 years?
Well, the economy will continue to go down because people are so much in debt that there's no way there can be a recovery, no way that jobs can recover until the debts that people have are written down. I don't see the health insurance payments going down. I think people's overhead is going to go up, and that's going to squeeze them. And after they meet the monthly nut of paying for their housing, paying the bank, paying the utilities, they're going to have even less to spend on goods and services. And that's not good for employment. It means that the new jobs that are created are going to continue to be part-time jobs, most of them at minimum wage. That's not good. So living standards are not going to go up. The dollar may go up because when people get poorer, they import more, and that may actually strengthen the dollar. Adam Smith said that often interest rates are lowest in countries seem more prosperous in countries going fastest to ruin. And we may have low interest rates. We may have the appearance of a strong dollar, but that's because nobody can afford to buy imports, just as the sign of Greek. So if you want to see where we're going, take a look at what's happened to Greece when you had the equivalent of the Obama-Hillary program imposed by the International Monetary Fund on it. Look at what is happening in France, and look at what's happening in Spain. Look to Europe as how we can go down, be squeezed into a slow crash, slower and slower, and what the government will try to do, or what the 1% will try to do, whether they're Republican or Democrat, will try to blame the foreigner. They'll find some foreigner to blame, they'll find some enemy to blame, but they won't blame themselves, and they won't blame Wall Street, and they won't blame the insurance monopolies or other monopolies. It's all basically an exercise in deception and distraction of attention, and people no longer have a real newspaper to read that'll give them this. That's why your show is so valuable, because you're able to talk about what we're talking about today, and this just doesn't get discussed in the mainstream press.
Well, Michael, I thank you very much for your insights. As always, you give us a lot to think about. Professor Michael Hudson, my guest. I'm Gary Nall. You're listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from around the world, and that was Professor Michael Hudson. I'm going to share some positive solutions to many of the issues that we just discussed, plus what I consider I'm going to give you some revolutionary acts that you can engage in. And if any of these make sense, use them. If they don't, that's fine. But at least we have to have a starting point if we're the average person and have not been actively committed to social change in a good way. I'll just share a couple more thoughts, however. One of the reasons we're in crisis today is because of four different groups of people: those engaged in mergers and acquisitions, those engaged in corporate rating and equity partnerships, equity buyers, and those engaged in hedge funds. The problem with all these is that their intent and purpose was not to fund new businesses in local communities that would help be an anchor in that community for the citizens as well as those outside of that society. That they could have done. They had the money and resources to do that. Instead, what has happened is, like a mergers and acquisitions, let's just say, and I'll give you an example. Let's say that you've been running a company, for 100 years, and you employ 500 employees, and they make a good living wage, and they have health benefits, and they're within all of the standards. There's a union, and there's OSHA, and the people work in a healthy environment. It's certainly not toxic. And they make a product that's actually useful for society. So it's a win-win on all levels. They then have enough money that they pass that dollar they make around to society about 67 times. So the person that works in the factory making bricks goes down to get a haircut. The barber then takes that money from the haircut and goes over and has something from the deli. The guy in the deli goes to a movie. The person in the movie goes to a dry cleaners, and so it goes. That has all changed. Now you're lucky to get money circulating in an economy seven times because it doesn't circulate locally. It goes through the credit card companies, and then it goes to the major corporations. So let's say that this is a company well-run, doesn't have any debt. In comes a group of people, and they make a deal. Your company is worth $50 million. We're going to give you $50 million. And let's say if it's a publicly owned company, they'll buy up to over 5% of the stock where they can get a seat on the board, and then they lobby to say this stock is undervalued, it's underperforming. We can get more value for the shareholders, and we're hence going to buy this company and make it more valuable. So where the stock is selling for $20 a share, we're going to offer $30. So a lot of stockholders look and say, wow, I'm going to get a big increase right now in the value of my stock, and then later it may split 2-for-1. So everybody's in. And whether it's a private company where the owners are getting a big payday, bigger than they've ever seen, or it's a publicly controlled corporation. Now, what the public doesn't know is that only about 5% or less of the actual investment will come from the mergers and acquisition people. Most will come from bridge loans from Wall Street that will get upwards of a 10% right from the top off, and that's a huge amount of profit. Plus, they will have shares that will not be reserved. Generally, when you buy a company, those in the company that's been purchased will have reserve shares, meaning you cannot pump and dump your stock. You can't go out the next day when it's at its highest level. You got to wait anywhere from a year to 2 years, then you can sell your stock. But Wall Street's not a part of that. They've lobbied to get laws that exclude them. So now the company ends up not being purchased for $50 million. No, $75 million. So where does that money go? Well, $50 million went to buy out the company, but $25 million went on top of that, and that's all going to be taken as commissions and management fees by the original group. Now the company that was well-run, that had no debt, now they've got $75 million. And so the profit that used to be there is no longer there. So they have to downsize. So they start stripping down the benefits. They will take away frequently the pension of the, because they control it now, of the workers, and half the workforce is laid off. Then they find out that why should we make a brick in the United States where our cost in the brick, including the labor, the union fees, health care, comes to about a dollar a brick. So that brick is going to have to sell for $3 because you got to wholesale it, and then the wholesaler is going to retail it, and then the retailer is going to have to make their profit. Generally, it's 6 to 1. Whatever your initial cost is, you have to multiply times 6, and that's the amount the public spends. When we can have bricks made in India, where they use child labor, or in China, where they use, in effect, poor labor, 16 cents a day, and we will get those, or an hour, and we'll get those bricks made, and we can actually get them made in another country, bring them back in the United States for 30 cents a brick. So all we need is the name, and that's what's of value. So they keep the name, they close down the factory, they save money. That money does not go to paying down the debt. It goes, again, as commissions and fees. It's a feeding orgy by the people that own it. This is how Mitt Romney got rich on Bain Capital. No one wants to look at how many Americans lost their jobs because of his economic model. And it's unfortunate that people on the right are so caught up in charisma and promises, they don't look at the reality. They don't look at how Donald Trump went bankrupt, not him personally, but his corporation. Remember his airlines? Remember his state company? Remember his university and all the, remember the casino hotels? In fact, a friend of mine, Mark Edis, died in a helicopter crash. He was running those Trump hotels in Atlantic City. He was part of the Grossinger family, and I was friends with the Grossingers. In fact, the last event ever done at Grossinger's Hotel in the Catskills, when the owner called and said, we don't have enough money to pay our help, who've been here for 40 years, could you do one more of your retreats? So I went up and did a retreat, and they made a lot of money, and were able to give some gifts, cash gifts to those who had been longtime employees, and then they closed down. By the way, it also happened at Brown's and a few others. But At the time, I was hearing about how the companies were actually run. And I also happened to have had someone who was very close to Trump from the beginning. So I have a lot of knowledge about how things are actually done. But I also have a lot of knowledge about how a lot of these people in these corporate positions act personally and then professionally. And we never look at the completeness of the person. We never look at how well did you do, you know, and show us. We only look at that which they tell us to look at. We look away from anything that might be an embarrassment to them or show they don't have the expertise they claim to. And it's also one thing for a person to use all their skills, which may be formidable, and all their insights to make themselves wealthy and their family and their partners. But that doesn't qualify them for running anything where the public has to be made whole, where you have to reverse it. You have to bring everything back to where the public and the commons are benefited, not you and your friends. And virtually every single pick that that Obama made, that the Clintons made in their administration, that Bush made, every one of those are virtually indistinguishable. Yes, there's a DeVos who believes in private education and vouchers and charter schools, some charter schools. Like there's a woman named Gray who has done an outstanding job in Newark with her charter school. Some are good, but an awful lot are not. And if you're going to have a private charter school, then you shouldn't be using public monies to fund private schools. It's one or it's the other. It's not both, because then the money you take away from the public school that goes to a charter school then defunds the public school, and people just don't seem to understand that. In any case, what you have is you have these mergers and acquisitions that then found that why should we open up a new business? Why should we hire anyone? Why should we engage in helping America grow at the local economy when we can rip off their assets, because that's all it is? We can exploit the fact that we can create debt and are not accountable for it. And no matter what happens, when the company finally, at one point it was 7 years and 2 months, then it was 5 years, now it's down to about 3. Once this company that we have taken over, it just has no more juice in it, then we're made whole. We're making 200 to 300% of our initial investment. I call it economic genocide, and those supporting it are economic genocidalists. Man, do they have a lot of negative karma to live with. But they don't care. They're virtually indifferent to everyone else's suffering. Now look at Linens and Things. That was a good company with good product, and they were bought. Look at Circuit City, and they were bought. Look at Macy's, and they were bought by Federation. Look at all these companies today. Sears Roebuck. I was going to buy something recently at a Sears Roebuck for my home. And normally I would have, because they have good products and they have one of the best reputations for standing behind the products, and always have. But then I realized that Eddie Lampert, who owns it, has had to put $2 billion of his own money in it. He's a multi-billionaire. And I don't see Sears surviving. I believe, it's my belief, that over the next 2 years, he will not take any more money. And they only have about 9 months' worth of working capital. Then they're out of money. Then they can't pay their suppliers. Then I believe he'll start selling off the real estate, and instead of declaring bankruptcy, he'll simply sell it off and it'll close down, because the only value Sears has now is in its real estate, in the buildings, and the real estate market is, for them, would be good. But for those buying something, think about it. Something goes wrong with your washer and dryer, who's going to fix it? Who's going to honor that insurance and warranty? So there's a whole lot that people don't consider. So I'm looking at America, and I'm looking at over 4,000 corporations that were once well-run for 40 to 50 years, were the bedrock of local commerce, that gave people a living wage along with 49% approximately of union representation, where there was a person bargaining on your behalf. And that's why I supported union, except for the corrupt management of union, and which there have been many. But the whole principles of unionization, and when it was at its best, America grew. The average person's income, the working person's, had savings. They didn't have debt. We didn't have debtors' prisons. We didn't have student debt. None of the things were now, and we're not looking how we got there. So do you think for a moment that a president and his cabinet that have exploited the labor market, that have been anti-union, do you think that they're going to then make real deals? How can you compete with China, India, Bangladesh? You can't. So you have to completely do a whole new model where the government then puts aside, and this I think is a very practical one, and I've shared this with Michael Hudson and other economists, and they agree with this. You put aside $2 trillion and you give out no interest, because you completely close down the completely corrupt Federal Reserve, and you turn over the money to the Treasury that originally had the only right to print money. And the Treasury, then you forgive all of the interest on the debt. It's owed to the corrupt banks. They shouldn't have it. You write that off. All right. So they don't get any more money. And then you close down the Federal Reserve, and then you give interest-free loans to any qualified person that can open a business in every community, and you give them a head start. No payments due for 1 year, but they must have the ability to hire, for every $1 million, two people at a living wage plus health insurance, and you have universal health insurance. And that way, you could get anywhere from 10 to 20 million people working again. You de-ghettoize all of America. That's the only way to do it, because you're supporting something local without debt. It is the debt that destroys the ability to compete. Remember what he just said. China, a person doesn't have to worry about being foreclosed on because the government continues to roll over the debt or forgive it. In the United States, we could have said no to all home foreclosures, but Obama made the choice. And remember this for his legacy. And especially if you voted for him because he was black and you're black and you thought you had a man that would represent you in the White House. No, if Martin Luther King was there, you would be correct. If Rosa Parks was there, you'd be correct. If Frederick Douglass was there, and all the other real citizens who cared about equality, you had been right. With him, no. He looked after the interest of Wall Street banks to the tune of $29.6 trillion, all done in secret, outside of the initial TARP plan. So what you need is local investment from local banks that give zero interest, and in effect micro loans also for those that are not going to open larger businesses, but we should have all businesses protected. So just an idea. And now some positive ideas to help. First and foremost, and by the way, tomorrow I'm going to tell you about the Rockefellers because I've finished a lot of research showing what they actually own, and you'll be amazed at how many companies they own and control without their name being associated. Here's some what I consider important acts so we can get off their grid and out of their control. Shift all of your savings and checkings to local savings and loan banks, credit unions that do not engage in any form of derivatives and exotic investment instruments. Most important is to remove all funds from major large banking institutions such as Citi, Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo, and support also civil rights organizations with attorneys who will challenge the status quo, challenge the Department of Justice, which is utterly corrupt from every single angle, support the ACLU, support Public Citizens and other, support the institutes that are not afraid of taking on the federal government. Act locally, every day. Local businesses, support them. Local foods, buy them. Farmers market, food co-ops, shop there. Local community projects, engage in them. Buy American made. Help initiate and support community barter services where individuals can sign up and provide their talents and time when available to share on a non-currency-based exchange model, where if you're a painter, go to a dentist and exchange painting for the dentist for some dental work. You can do that with every single possible because everyone has a service they need. So that is called fair exchange. So if you went to a dentist and they charge you $5,000, well, you know, what would it cost to paint someone's house? $5,000. But it's also is equalized. You take the amount that someone would normally charge, cut that in half, and that way you can say it's a fair exchange. Also, engage in all forms of community service. Become engaged in those in need of kindness and compassion and empathy in your communities. This might be acting as a big brother or act as a big sister for orphans or parentally deprived children. It might be helping senior citizens, doing their shopping for them, doing their banking for them. There are a lot of senior citizens who are physically not capable or fearful of going out because they've been victimized. So extend a hand to senior citizens, helping with their transportation. Boycott food purchase from major supermarket chains. Stop shopping in the major chains. Stop shopping in Whole Foods because Whole Foods is a part of the problem, not the solution. Look at how many times they've been caught, Mackey's firm, engaged in unethical or illegal practices. Boycott all genetically modified foods and only support GM labeling. Become a socially responsible investor. Divest your money and challenge your pensions if they're invested in anything like the fossil fuel industry or the corporate banking industry. And there are plenty of legitimate, green, and humanistic places to invest. Stop investing in anything that exploits labor or the environment. Connect with community members who are organizers for local events and participate. Become engaged in your communities to organize and support anti-foreclosure referendums and support the reform and improvement of rental policies for those who have fallen behind in their mortgages due to economic recession. Become socially engaged by protesting mandatory vaccinations and subscribe to progressive watch organizations devoted to mobilizing citizens to protest congressional and state bills that only benefit corporations, not the citizens. Join together wherever there is a community that is hit by foreclosures and go after the legislators at the state level and go after the federal legislators to protest them. Go to Washington and protest a particular legislator because that gets their attention. If you've got even 100 people outside saying, do not support this predatory legislator, they're in the pocket, they're pimping for special interests, that embarrasses them. That's how you get their attention. Also, vote with your conscience, not your fears. Get complete voting records and corporate funding histories of any politician in an election to become aware of what he or she is likely to do when in office and why. And sponsor progressive candidates for all offices. Vote conscientiously in your towns, cities, counties, and states. Become involved in your public schools and community halls. Support and initiate referendums that would convert abandoned buildings or lots to the public commons. We have enough square footage in New York City alone to house over 100,000 homeless people. They're empty now. We could convert those. They should be, but you've got to bring pressure to do it. And also grow your own produce as possible within your means. Educate yourself about health. The healthier you are, the less likely you are to fall victim to the completely corrupt medical-industrial complex. Do everything to sustain your environment. Use only paper, not plastic, unless it's biodegradable plastic. Don't rely upon mainstream media for anything. They're incapable of telling the truth. And start small discussion groups among neighbors and friends in your community and meet regularly. Connect with a spiritual community of your choosing that aligns with progressive and revolutionary values and practice it. Green your home and apartment, which can include re-insulating to minimize temperature fluctuations, use solar, and install exhaust systems for efficient cooling. Sign petitions. It only takes a few seconds. And call legislators on different legislation. Adopt alternative forms of transportation that might include more walking and bicycling for a national program for a high-speed rail, non-polluting system that could take us from L.A. to New York, from Chicago to Miami, and we could no longer have to use airplanes, trucks, and buses because of that. And that's already done around the world. Donate whatever is not necessary to your life, such as unused clothing and anything in your home that could be used by a poor person. Stop buying what you don't need. Tear up their credit cards. Stop supporting them. Support organizations such as the Organic Consumer Association, Food and Water Watch, progressive media like Counterpunch, Common Dreams, Truth Out, Consortium News, and the ACLU, the Union of Concerned Scientists, Greenpeace, and political third parties, especially at the local level. It's fine to organize and participate in demonstrations and protests, but know what you're protesting and who the organizers are. A long time ago, I gave up supporting many of the organizers, even though the cause was right, because I saw many of the people had been corrupted by special interests or their own egos. The cause may be good, in which case I will support the cause. It doesn't mean I'm supporting the people leading the cause. Be critical of the people leading causes until you know more about them and how honest they are in their ethics. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. This has been an hour of the Progressive Commentary Hour.